Movie night tonight on ESPN. The Angels having a tough time until divine intervention saves it all. Angels in the outfield tonight, 8 Eastern on ESPN. And tomorrow, UFC fight night, Poirier versus Hooker. Big night, ESPN, 8 p.m. Eastern. And let's not forget, it's also going to be on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. And it's great to be back with you here on Get Up. Ryan Smith in for Greeny. It's 10 a.m. Eastern. And thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate the time. We are with you until 11 a.m. and then it's going to be First Take following us. But we got a packed show for you, and let us start with college football. And with the coronavirus cases soaring in more than half the country, there are growing concerns about whether the college football season can be held as scheduled. Yesterday on Golic and Wingo, UConn's women's basketball coach Gino Auriemma was asked about his confidence in college sports in the fall.
If college football wasn't $4 billion, whatever it is, operation, they would have canceled fall sports already. So everything humanly possible, I'm sure, is going to be done to protect college football. So having said that, my confidence is okay until something happens that severely impacts college football, and then all bets are off.
Strong, strong words from Gino. Let's welcome in Laura Rutledge and Paul Feinbaum. And Laura, I got to start with you. What are you hearing about the current state of the college football season and the conversations being had about it starting on time?
Yeah, it's just all over the place, Ryan. And I think if you pay attention to Paul's show, you would hear that, too. It's like every single day there's a different story around this. And we kind of knew it would be that way, but it's just been even more all over the map. I would say even this week and going as far back as to last weekend. And that's going to continue to be the case. What's been interesting to me since we even talked about this on this show on Monday is that the timeline keeps changing for when they actually have to make a definite decision about what's going to happen with college football. I was told even as recently as yesterday that there could be some universities, and this is just so spread out depending on what part of the country we're talking about, there could be some universities that don't even make their decision until August. They're trying to push this as far back as possible to try and ensure having a college football season, as you heard Gino Auriemma say it. We're talking about $4-plus billion just for the 50-plus Power 5 public schools. So public universities alone, we're talking about a large amount of money, but there's so much more there, and Paul can add to this, but I really think that that timeline keeps shifting. We were told initially end of June, early July, right around now, we would have more definite information, and we don't have that yet. It may keep pushing back and back, closer and closer to what was supposed to be the start of the season for whether or not we can have college football.
Yeah, which in fact would end up pushing back the season, or like you say, whether we even have it. Paul, what are you hearing about where your thoughts are right now on the season starting? What do you think?
Ryan, college football is just an absolute hot mess right now. I mean, you have so many different views and really no leader, as has been pointed out many, many times. Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner, joined us last night on our program, and he said that conference alone has between 15 and 20 contingency plans. I mean, I don't know where you come up with all those, but they refuse to admit that this is going to be an insurmountable challenge. I think what Laura said is really where you have to keep your eye on. By now, we thought we would know everything. We don't know anything. And I think we're now pointing toward mid-July for the next big decision. And I think many people in college football privately, nobody publicly is saying this, but privately are saying that the likelihood of the season being delayed is very good.
Wow. And you know, Laura, when you talk about college football, I know people are anxious to get back to the game, but we're talking about teenagers, kids in many cases playing and wanting to keep them safe. What are you hearing about players or from players about their concerns?
Well, yeah, I have had a few more players reach out to me just saying that they are concerned. I reported this on Monday that there are some players that are trying to come together even to write a letter of concern to the NCAA, and they're working on that right now. The problem is they can't all get on the same page because they all have different concerns, which is understandable in this. You know, the parents are starting to get more and more concerned. I think a lot of that has to do with seeing some of these states where cases are spiking, a lot of them specifically in the Southeast, and yet throughout all of this, And I would echo some of what Paul said. The conference commissioners and then even the athletic directors that I still talk to, the decision makers in all of this are still very optimistic that they're planning for college football season to start on time and for it to go ahead as usual as it possibly could in these times.
Paul, a couple seconds left. Brian Windhorst said earlier this week that the NBA plan was almost too big to fail. Do you feel the same way about college football?
Absolutely. But the big difference, there's no bubble in college football. There's no commissioner. You have states where you could, like Arizona and Texas, that could stop the train very quickly. It is too big to fail. But right now, many people would probably bet it is going to fail.
Imagine that. Laura, Paul, thank you so much. Appreciate it. And then let us turn to the NBA. Speaking of that, the NBA briefed players on Thursday on their security plan to help enforce health and safety protocols in the Orlando bubble, where the league is going to restart next month. The teams are scheduled to begin arriving in Orlando on July 7th. Keep in mind, the state of Florida has experienced a spike in COVID-19 during the month of June. And according to Johns Hopkins, the number of daily confirmed new cases has increased, listen to this, 582% during that time, reaching its single-day high on the 24th. Now, The Athletic anonymously quoted some NBA GMs about their concerns. Here they are. If the cases keep spiking in Florida, things are going to happen. I'm really, really concerned for the league big picture-wise in many, many ways. Here's another. I know all the proper measures are being taken, but still a lot is unknown. You know, and I know, why we are playing. For the money. If not that, do you really think we would be playing? I get it. I'm in. But with hesitation. And here's a telling one. With each case that rises in Orlando, the smart players with families are like, why are we going there again? I mean, that's the question. Let's welcome in our analyst, NBA analyst, Jay Williams. Jay Will is a former player. What concerns do you have about the NBA's restart amidst the pandemic?
I mean, you obviously just stated it right there, brother. It's you're going to a place that has risen 380% over the last couple of days as it relates to COVID-19 cases. And, you know, as airtight as you can make that bubble, it only takes one person for people to start getting affected. And you have to think about this. This is something that's realistic. And I know a lot of these stars are. First off, you're asking people to leave their family for 2.5-3 months. Understand it's about the money. That's still a major ask. It's even asked for, you know, other people to go down there for that amount of time, let alone these stars. And then secondly, you know, if you have people like Avery Bradley, whose sons have pre-existing conditions, or if you have any other family members that could be affected by this, you're going to be hesitant. You know, it is about the money to a degree. But what if LeBron James catches COVID-19? What if Giannis or James Harden, some of these biggest players for their own teams, that you're watching them because it is such a star-driven league? What happens if these superstars catch it? Then how ultimately will that affect your view of what this means? And that's a question everybody's going to ask.
See,
is it worth it?
Oh, go ahead. I think that's key right there, what you say. If LeBron or one of the big stars catches it, that would be a PR disaster for the NBA, much less what do you do? So I hate to be the naysayer because I know people want to get back to basketball. But when do you think should be the point where the NBA says, look, we got a lot of positive cases. If, in fact, that happens, look, we got to pull the plug. When do you think that point would be?
You know, I'm not going to sit up here and tell you it's going to be a certain number or a certain date. We are in uncharted territory. I do not know. Even seeing that Nikola Jokic has COVID, but now he's flying back from Serbia to work out with the team. You know, what's necessarily the protocol to make sure that he is ready to play when that time comes? We are still compiling so much data as it relates to these types of things. And as much as I follow CDC guidelines, it even seems like those guidelines, to a degree, are somewhat fluid. So if that's the case, it's hard for me to put an actual metric on that. And I think ultimately this is where you have a guy like Adam Silver that you have to trust in how he processes information. And ultimately it's going to be his own subjective judgment on when is enough if he has to pull the plug.
Yeah, it's impossible to be certain in all of this, but the fluidity breeds confusion, which makes it hard to figure out where this is all going. Jay, thank you. So, if you had an all-time NFL draft, would you take Patrick Mahomes, Tom Brady, or somebody else with your number one pick? Or do you have to take a quarterback even at all? The answer is coming up next.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Back with you on Get Up. Let's talk about Patrick Mahomes. You know, Ryan Clark was asked on Twitter if Patrick Mahomes had already done enough to be the number one overall pick in a redraft of every football player that has ever played. And on the show Thursday, Dominique Foxworth confirmed that he would be in resounding fashion.
You watch football, you see what this man is capable of, playing the most important position of any major team sports, the most impactful at least. He's the best we've seen do it, and you can't even say it's a fluke because he's done it 2 years in a row. And when he was healthy this past season, he was better than he was his MVP season. So I don't understand how you can make any argument other than going with Patrick Mahomes at this point. He's 24 years old. Like, technically, he could still be on his parents' insurance, and he's already had two better football seasons than almost any other quarterback that we've seen in the history of football. He could still get better.
He could still be on his parents' insurance. That's good. That's nice to know. Let's welcome the guys back in. Mike, I want to start with you. Who would be your number one overall pick?
I would go with Tom Brady just because he's done it for a long period of time. And I'll say this. This is the hardest position to get of any player, of any position in any sport. The quarterback position in pro football is harder than playing point guard, being a catcher, relief pitcher. And I would take Tom Brady over Mahomes just because he's done it for so long. And maybe because I have such scar tissue from being with the Jets and Dolphins for so long. But Mahomes, his trajectory, Ryan, should be in that conversation sooner than later.
Dan?
I mean, I didn't hear Don's argument. Mine would be Tom Brady as well. I go six Super Bowls in a team sport, nine Super Bowl appearances in a salary cap league, four-time Super Bowl MVP, three-time NFL MVP, two-time Rookie of the Year, or Offensive Player of the Year, multiple Super Bowl records, again, in a team sport. I love Patrick Mahomes, and no one has raved about Mahomes more than me since he became a starter. I can't put him past Brady just yet. I didn't hear Dom's argument. Dom makes some really good arguments. It's two of the greatest seasons we've ever seen. And his trajectory is certainly on, you know, track with doing what Tom has done. But do we think that it's a no-brainer that he's going to win MVP three times? Do we think it's a no-brainer he's going to win four Super Bowl MVPs? Do we think he's going to match six Super Bowl records? Mm-hmm. That has to come into play in a team sport at some point. I'm picking Tom Brady. It's a pretty clear decision for me, although I do like Dom's argument.
All right, and Dom, I'm going to get to you in a second. And by the way, Dan, just to sum it up, he said that Mahomes is amazing and he could still be on his parents' insurance, so there's that. That's huge, man. That's huge. Jeff. Jeff, what do you think?
You asking me now?
Yeah,
my
I got
turn.
You.
My turn to tell Dan and Mike that they need to understand the question here. The question wasn't who is the greatest of all time. The greatest of all time is Tom Brady. But Patrick Mahomes is the guy that you want leading your franchise no matter what. Of anybody all time, he is the perfect person to play football in the current era. He is perfect. Perfect. You cannot find a flaw. Look, Tom Brady, I love Tom Brady.
I think
he is the greatest of all time. But the idea of Patrick Mahomes being able to do everything with his arm, with his legs, in the locker room as a leader, this is the perfect football player. The fact that you're overlooking that because of what Tom Brady has already done is just a flawed mindset when it comes to this question.
Wait. Ryan, let me go after
real
this.
Quick, because I got to get Dom in because he's chomping at the bit.
Dan, you understand what real quick means?
Say some Dom, words. Go Dan. Ahead, Dom. Talk. Go ahead, and then we'll get to Dan. Go ahead, Dom.
Okay, so, I mean, I think Jeff makes sense. I'm happy that we have someone on this show who makes sense, and I'm sorry that I have to explain to you guys what a draft is about. It's about projection. That's what it's about. You guys are making an argument that he is the greatest, telling me all the things that he's done. But we already know that Patrick Mahomes' best is better than Tom Brady's best. Patrick Mahomes' mediocre is better than Tom Brady's mediocre. Patrick Mahomes' worst, we haven't seen it yet. He's never played a bad game in two seasons of football. I don't understand how you can look at the skills that he shows on the field and project in a draft scenario that you'd rather have the guy who has been less consistent and less outstanding throughout this process. Like, I understand all the things that he's accomplished, but in a raw ability standpoint, it's impossible not to pick Patrick Mahomes, the best quarterback we've ever seen in the most important position. All right, Dan, now you can be wrong again.
All right, we can't just say like raw ability. We've seen raw ability come into the NFL at that position
and perform it
100
times.
Yes, we can. And they stink. To Darlington. No, you can't, Darlington. You make the comment of like, he's the perfect player when it comes to the ability to throw and run and lead. I don't really care how you get to the destination. Just get there. And Tom Brady has gotten to the destination better than anybody more often ever.
So is Patrick Mahomes. He won the Super Bowl this year.
No, not as much as Tom. Like, you can't sit there and go, this isn't about the greatest of all time. It's about who can become.
He won the Super Bowl.
Well, guys, we're talking about different.
Okay. Wait. Dan, I want you to finish your point.
Times.
Dan, I'm going to let you finish your point and then go. Then I'll go to Jeff and Dom.
Such a
But we can't, Darlington, you can't sit there and go like, this isn't about who's the greatest of all time. This is about a projection. Well, I mean, if Tom Brady was, we have to weigh what he has accomplished in some capacity. No, just off talent-wise, he would not be my first overall pick. But what he's accomplished, I have to weigh in some capacity comparison to what I think Patrick is going to do.
The reason why the Chiefs are any good right now, or the reason why the Chiefs are great right now, is simple. Patrick Mahomes. If you go through the history of the Patriots, it has fluctuated. It has been the defense. It has been Randy Moss. It has been partial Tom Brady. You cannot look at that team and not give credit to other people. Patrick Mahomes is a singular
talent.
That's
wrong.
You don't want that.
Okay. I got to leave it there. I know everybody's chomping at the bit. I got to leave it there. But guys, I love the passion. Thank you guys. Appreciate it. We'll talk about this again, I'm sure. And we got to talk about this. Vince Carter officially calling it quits on Thursday. Hey, check this out. He played an NBA record 22 seasons. He's the only NBA player to play in four different decades. And Carter epitomized the modern NBA. He was sixth on the all-time list in threes. He finished with over 1,000 dunks. He's the only player with 1,000 dunks and 2,000 threes in NBA history. And who can forget his legendary dunk contest at the 2000 All-Star Weekend with that 360 windmill, 180 windmill off two steps between the legs. Over. Remember that? Honey dip. And then a two-handed dunk from just inside the free throw line. Man, what a career he had. We got to bring back in Jay. Jay, you played briefly with Vince. What did you learn from him?
Le dunk de la mort, which I may have butchered that in French, but it means dunk of death. And knowing that, you know, playing against France in the Olympics, because he's an Olympic gold medalist, having that dunk over Frederick Weiss was something that was so profound to me. It was so beyond to me that, you know, I found myself in practice when I was trailing him on a fast break, knowing that I can get back and foul, knowing that sometimes the pickup game could be in jeopardy, just taking a little bit of my foot off the throttle and just saying, oh, I wonder what dunk Vince is going to do randomly in practice on a fast break. Oh, that's a 360 windmill. Okay, he just did that very nonchalantly. It's just a different level. And for anybody that questions whether this man will be a Hall of Famer, just get out of here. Go watch the docu called The Carter Effect. You get a chance to watch how him and T-Mac ultimately have changed the landscape of basketball in Canada. And those days in Toronto, those days in New Jersey, you know, 8-time All-Star, 2-time All-NBA player, guy who's won the dunk contest in a legendary fashion and form. Having a chance to play with him was a dream come true for me. And I'll tell you this, there was no better dunker in the history of basketball than Vince Carter. And I own that with every breath I have in my body.
And there you guys go together, back in the day, playing together. You know, I think people don't really understand when they look at Vince Carter how he completely changed into a different player, but yet was still so effective from where he was in the beginning of his career.
Yeah, you know, look, Vince, being obviously a guy who was a slasher in college, working on that three-point shot, you know, I saw a video of him the other day where I think it was Omari Spellman. He gave him a head fake, you know, and he came down and he made him spin around and shot a jump shot from pretty deep, even at 43 years old. His game has transcended. You know, the interesting thing that will always be the reality about Vince is, you know, we just came off a great docu in The Last Dance and Michael Jordan. And when you see the talent of Vince Carter, you see Michael Jordan. You see somebody who was as skilled, maybe more athletic, you know, more graceful to a degree in the air. Maybe skill-wise wasn't all the way there as MJ was. But, I mean, definitely had the ability to get there. And you always wonder, what if with Vince Carter? Which doesn't take away from his brilliance of his legacy. Doesn't take away from him being a Hall of Famer. But you always wonder if Vince was able to get it into another gear and sustain that gear, where would he be considered in the all-time greats? It would be a drastically different conversation than what we're having right now about Vince. And it's still respectful. It's just what if? Wow.
Yeah, it really is amazing. And we'll have to see if he ends up in the Hall of Fame. He certainly seems to have the credentials to end up just there. Jay, thanks. There. WBC super featherweight kingpin. Miguel Burchelt steps back in the ring in his first non-title bout since 2015. Tomorrow night, TV Azteca Studios in Mexico, he takes on Elizar Valenzuela in the main event. Coverage of the main card begins 11 Eastern right here on ESPN, ESPN app, and ESPN Deportes. So Colin Kaepernick, he's looking for a job in the NFL. LeBron James wants the league to apologize to him. How would our experts handle that apology? We'll see.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
We've got a great lineup on ESPN today. Coming up next, it's First Take, followed by SportsCenter, NFL Live and The Jump, and then 4 UFC Live previews Fight Night from Vegas tomorrow. A two-hour SportsCenter is in at 5 with the PTI guys joining at 5:30, and we cap the day with SportsCenter at 11 Eastern. And welcome back to Get Up. It is just about 10:30 Eastern right here on the East, and you're watching Get Up. Mike Greenberg is off for the day, so I'm Ryan Smith in for him. We're with you till 11 a.m., and then we'll take you to First Take. But first, I want to take you to a little Colin Kaepernick. Now, listen to this. Colin Kaepernick essentially wants back in the NFL, and the NFL says that it's been advised to prepare teams to start training camps on time, which for the most part means the teams will report no later than July 28th. Now, the big question becomes, will Kaepernick be one of those reporting? He last played in 2016. A lot of people wonder if he's going to get another chance. Let's bring back in Dan Orlovsky, Dominique Foxworth, Mike Tannenbaum, and let's start with Jeff Darlington. Jeff, what are you hearing about the level of interest in Kaepernick right now?
Well, not much, in a word, Ryan. This is a situation where it has certainly become trendy for people to say that, yes, I'd be willing to sign Colin Kaepernick, yet that has not yet been followed by signing Colin Kaepernick. So a situation that continues to be fluid at a time, though, by the way, when a team could certainly sign Kaepernick and sort of maybe avoid some of the distraction, the quote-unquote distraction that often gets cited as an excuse for not signing Kaepernick. This is a time when certainly facilities are not open and press conferences are not controversial, if you will. So if a team is going to sign Kaepernick, it actually feels like this would be the time to do it. But that being said, the more I hear from people saying they're interested in signing Kaepernick, the more I wonder why he is not yet signed.
Yeah, it's interesting. They're saying all the right words, but they're not actually bringing him in. Now, what is also an interesting twist in all this, LeBron James, he's been very outspoken on this, and he added something yesterday. He told Bloomberg Businessweek that he thinks the NFL still owes Kaepernick an apology.
As far as the NFL, I'm not in those locker rooms. I'm not with those guys, but I do understand that an apology, I have not heard a true official apology to Colin Kaepernick on what he was going through and what he was trying to tell the NFL and tell the world about why he was kneeling when when he was doing that as a San Francisco 49er. So I just see that to be still be wrong. And now they are listening some, but I still think we have not heard that official apology to a man who basically sacrificed everything for the better of this world.
It's an interesting comment because the NFL, Roger Goodell, we've heard, hey, teams should be open to signing him. They've made the point that, hey, we can't sign them. But, guys, I want to put you in the commissioner's spot. You're Roger Goodell. So, Commissioner Mike Tannenbaum, how would you handle an apology to Colin Kaepernick?
I think this is a really hard spot for the commissioner because while he could apologize on behalf of the NFL, there's really not much else he can do in terms of getting Colin Kaepernick signed. And while I think the commissioner has shown great leadership, the draft, his recent video addressing social injustice, this is a tough dynamic for him because at the end of the day, he can't sign the player. So he should and could apologize, saying that the league could have handled things differently in the past. We've all learned recently a lot of things that all of us could have done better. But more fundamentally, as it comes to him signing, there's really nothing he can do except encourage teams to sign. And obviously the environment's different. And again, we talked about this earlier in the show. Fundamentally, there'll be 96 quarterbacks that are going to be ready to play this year because of COVID-19. And to think that he's not one of the best 96 quarterbacks is just inconceivable.
But, Mike, would you actually say the words if you were the commissioner? Would you actually say, hey, I'm going to come out on TV and say to Colin, I apologize, Colin Kaepernick, that you're not in the league?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think his video started with that where, again, I don't think Roger Goodell 4 years ago would have done that. So I think that was a meaningful step, certainly symbolically. And I think we have to take him at his word. What he said and how he said it to me was very powerful and authentic. And I think he should come out and say, yeah, as a league, this was not handled correctly. And now we have an opportunity to fix it. So I think he should apologize. He could. But then again, moving the story forward, Ryan, someone else is going to have to step up and sign him.
So Commissioner Dominic Foxworth, how would you say?
Oh, well, I think that the apology would be kind of empty. Because if I were in that position, no one in the league has admitted to blackballing him. They didn't cut him. He opted out of a contract and then wasn't re-signed. So I don't know that you can apologize for blackballing if you are holding the line that you didn't blackball him. I guess you apologize for not supporting him and defending him throughout that and contributing to creating an environment environment where he was not an attractive quarterback. So you can apologize for all those things, but it all rings hollow as long as he is out of the league and you can't make up for the time that he's lost. So an apology, I don't think really does much, but as a commissioner of the league, I think you probably do need to step out and say that you failed and the league failed to support a player who was on the right side of history in that moment.
Commissioner Dan Orlovsky.
Yeah, I mean, pencils have erasers for a reason, and it's okay to make mistakes and then apologize for them. And so, I think an apology is an important one. Opposing your past doesn't condemn your present self. And so Roger Goodell can look back and differ with what he thought then or what the decisions were then without having to condemn his 2020 self. And so I think an apology is important. And bringing it to the football field, I do think that Roger Goodell has the opportunity to have conversations with owners and look at the opportunity to bring Colin Kaepernick back to rosters. Again, bringing it back to the football field, if you're a contending team this year, you absolutely should sign Colin Kaepernick. I'll say that again. If you are a team who thinks you are a bona fide, real Super Bowl contender, Colin Kaepernick should be on your roster. If you're the Seattle Seahawks, the Houston Texans, Baltimore, Kansas City, Tennessee, Don mentioned Pittsburgh. It just makes too much football sense. But it does start with a sincere apology.
Yeah, and that apology, I think people know that whatever the NFL does in an apology is not going to satisfy everybody. But there's nothing wrong with going back and saying, hey, did we handle this right? No, we won't do that going forward. It'd be interesting to see what they end up doing. Now, here's another issue they're dealing with, and it's talking about protocols for player safety going into this potential restart, or their start, I should say, of the season. NFL Executive Vice President Jeff Pasch says the league has advised teams to prepare to start training camps on time. Most teams are expected to have players report no later than July 28th, and Roger Goodell spoke to reporters on Thursday after a virtual meeting with NFL owners.
We had a very lengthy discussion on our preparation for the 2020 season and our ongoing work as we prepare to open training camps on time to get ready for games at our stadiums. We've discussed all these topics with the Players Association on numerous occasions, as recently as just the last couple of days. We're both focused on ensuring the players, as well as coaches and other essentials to the game, will have the safest possible environment this season. Obviously, that includes our fans also. Those conversations have been very productive, and obviously there's a lot more for us to do.
In a little bit of time, Jeff, how are players, coaches, and GMs approaching the NFL's expectation of starting camps on time?
It's funny, Ryan. I was actually talking to, just very casually too, like a normal conversation with a guy who's a franchise quarterback, a veteran franchise quarterback, and said, like, oh, when are you heading back? And his answer was, I don't know. Like, when it comes to going back for training camp. Like, so yes, the NFL is saying that training camps are starting on time, but there is just this obvious, thick level of uncertainty when it comes to players about what all of this actually means. And that's not a knock on the NFL. They continue to do things that earns the praises of executives that I've spoken to, who basically say that at least the NFL is trying to move forward so that if it is a safe situation to have a football season, they will be prepared to do just that. But to that point, when you talk to players, 2 days ago last year, they announced the dates of training camp opening. So this would be a time when players would know exactly what their schedule looks like. And right now, even as the NFL says, you should follow that guideline, everybody's still looking at each other saying, is this really going to happen? So if you feel uncertain about this, you can rest assured that so too do the players who actually play the game feel exactly the same.
Yeah, and let's not forget in all of this, the NFL's plans, everything they have going, has to comport with what government officials and health and safety officials say at the time of that. So we'll have to see if at that time government is saying and other officials are saying, hey, it's okay to come back in the way they want to. So what's the level of optimism about whether the NFL will conduct an entire season?
Well, you just said it right there. I would say at this point, anybody who tells you that they are fully optimistic, quite honestly, is probably not a great source on the subject. Because to your point, I mean, we're hearing a fluid situation. I mean, the governor of Texas just announced new positions for that state when it comes to the reopening. So we don't know what the climate's going to look like in a month. And that is exactly what's being echoed by executives across the NFL. Again, not a knock on the NFL. They continue to issue protocols to try to, A, let people back into the building of their facilities, B, start a safe training camp, C, eventually have football. If they need to scale those back, they will. But for now, they feel like it's better to have a plan and pull back than to move forward without one and be basically with your hands up if they can, in fact, have a season.
Yeah, at this point, they can only do what they can do. Good point, Jeff, and thanks. And then you talk about the health concerns. Take a look at this. Safety for the Saints. Malcolm Jenkins, obviously a big voice in the league, told CNN yesterday that the risks surrounding the coronavirus would have to be, quote, eliminated before he would feel comfortable returning to play.
Until we get to the point where we have protocols in place, and until we get to a place as a country where we feel safe doing it, we have to understand that football is a non-essential business. And so we don't need to do it. And so the risk, has to be really eliminated before I would feel comfortable with going back.
The elimination of this virus seems a long way off. Let's bring the guys back in. And Dan, I want to start with you. How do you react to these comments from Malcolm Jenkins?
I think this is a small example of how a lot of guys are going to feel. We're going to get differing opinions on this. You know, I referenced Avery Bradley earlier with the Lakers and him going, you know what, I can't go back because of the dynamics of my family. It is not worth the risk for me. There are going to be players in the NFL that feel that way. But I also disagree with Malcolm saying that football is not an essential business. It may not be.
Dan froze a little bit there. Dan, we'll come back to you when we can, as soon as we get him back up. But Dom, I want to ask you, what do you think?
Oh, yeah, and I certainly understand where Malcolm Jenkins was coming from. And it's unfortunate that Dan got cut off when he did, because I'm sure he was going to clarify that football is obviously non-essential. But for guys who have committed their lives to getting this opportunity, it feels essential to them. Like that opportunity to make the money that's going to set up their life going forward and probably be the lion's share of their entire career earnings. Like, they can't lose that opportunity. So for a guy like Malcolm Jenkins, who's late in his career, has won Super Bowls or has won a Super Bowl and won and made a lot of money, it probably feels a little easier, or a lot easier, honestly, to walk away from this opportunity. And it feels smart, because the cost benefit analysis suggests to him that it's not going to change his life, and it's not as important as putting his family and himself at risk. But I guarantee you there are a lot of young guys who have worked their entire lives for this opportunity, and they feel as though they cannot let it slip through their fingertips, and it's worth the risk for them to go out there and expose themselves and maybe even expose their families. Hopefully, the NFL will start to have some sort of contingency plan that allows players to enter some sort of self-quarantine or some sort of bubble to protect themselves and not, or excuse me, to protect their families from the virus, because there will be a lot of guys who contract it.
Mike, what do you think?
I think from a team perspective, they have to deal with this head on, because the unfortunate reality, Ryan, is players and probably coaches are going to test positive and contract this virus. And teams have to work collaboratively and transparently to say, when that happens, we're going to obviously put you in quarantine. We're going to give you all the medical help you need and hopefully minimize whatever impact the virus may have. But we have to know that we're going into unprecedented times. And we're going to learn a lot. And unfortunately, some of you are going to get it. And we're going to deal with this together. And I'm sure we're going to look at this, you know, 2 months from now, 3 months from now, a little bit different. But we're going to move forward. And this is unfortunately going to be part of the price we pay for doing that.
Dom, a couple seconds left. Do you think we should push back the season? Or should it be pushed back?
Yeah, I absolutely think that they should consider pushing back the season and also have some sort of contingency for entering a bubble. I think that's what Dr. Fauci suggested, and I think he knows a lot more about infectious disease than anyone else. So the NFL hasn't been public about it, but I sure hope that they have some sort of plan to either cancel the season, push the season back, or move this into a bubble if things get a little out of hand in the country, not necessarily in the league, but numbers are going up in major cities and major states in this country. So the NFL should be ready to react to that if those things don't start to go down.
Dan is back with us. Dan, I've got just a couple seconds left, but I want to give you the last word. Should the season be pushed back?
Yeah, I think this season needs to be planned to push back. Absolutely. I heard Dom's argument, and it's exactly right. I'd say this: if a player is going to make $500,000 and it costs him $25,000 to self-quarantine himself for the season, a lot of guys would choose that option. But the NFL needs to continue to be flexible with their plans.
All right, guys, thanks so much. We'll be back with you in just a moment. Now let's talk about this. Coming back, Tom Brady, some of his new teammates practiced yesterday. Is that good news? Well, Dominique Foxworth did not like that call, and he'll tell you why next.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Back with you on Get Up and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, according to the Tampa Bay Times, check this out. Tom Brady, Mike Evans were among at least a dozen Buccaneers players to participate in a group workout at a local prep school on Thursday. Last Saturday, the NFLPA recommended that players should not be engaging in practicing together in private workouts. It's a quote from them. Now, Brady doesn't seem concerned about the NFLPA's recommendation. He posted on Instagram FDR's famous quote, "The only thing we have to fear is fear itself." I want to bring back in ESPN NFL reporter Jeff Darlington on this one. Jeff, why does Tom Brady feel comfortable participating in these group workouts despite the NFLPA's recommendation?
Well, I can tell you, Ryan, that I think this is probably a bad messaging, if nothing else, from Tom Brady in terms of what he's doing. Look, if he simply posted these exact same pictures and said something like, "Practicing safe social distancing while we get a workout in," we're probably not necessarily having this conversation. But he's not doing that, and as such, we're now having these conversations. So Tom Brady generally, you know, is not doing other things outside of these practices that puts himself in harm's way when it comes to this virus. But he is still going out there with these players. So, you know, it's a tough one. It's going to be a matter of what side you fall on it. But from what I understand, they feel like they're safe out there and they feel like they're not spreading it to the rest of the community when they leave that practice field. Whether that's good enough for those who question his decision-making with this, I guess that's up to the person who's making that opinion.
I think we would have these conversations even if he was posting something like we're social distancing, because he's Tom Brady. Yeah. If he's walking down the street, we're going to have a conversation about him. So I have to ask, what precautions are Brady and his teammates taking to conduct these private group workouts?
None. I mean, that's the thing. Like, they're not wearing masks out there. It's not as if they're generally just, you know, completely subscribing to social distancing with 6-foot measures. So, I can't sit here and tell you what they're doing is necessarily conforms with what people are recommending when it comes to keeping from the spread of the virus. All I can say is that it doesn't appear that they're going to continue to stop.
Yeah, and I could see how it would be uncomfortable to wear masks, and how do you really work it out if you're social distancing? But it is surprising to see that video and to see them all close together like that. I want to bring in the guys, Dan Orlovsky, Dominic Foxworth. Dan, what do you think of Brady leading these workouts despite the strong recommendation not to?
Well, my hope is that Tom Brady's had some intense conversations with all the people who are going to these workouts. And listen, Tom Brady's not the only one that is working out with teammates. It's happening across the NFL. But hopefully Tom has sat everybody down and said, guys, if we are going to do these workouts that we deem important, then we have to do some things. We have to sacrifice some other things. When we leave this place, we're always wearing masks. We're practicing social distancing. We're self-quarantining. We don't know if those guys are or are not doing that. But my hope is he's had that conversation, because if he hasn't and they're just going about living their life and practicing, then yeah, I would deem this irresponsible. Now, taking it to the field, because that's what I always like to do, I think the motivation behind this or the urgency behind this is Tom Brady's very aware of the setting that he's in. It's 43 years old, and that the New Orleans Saints and Drew Brees and Sean Payton have 14 years together. And Tom Brady's doing everything he can on the field to close that gap, to make sure that there's no excuses or explanations in September, October. But I certainly hope that they've had those conversations of how important and respectful they need to be to the guidelines of the NFLPA and the CDC.
So, Neek, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I hope they've had those conversations, and maybe since they're outside, it could be a little bit safer, but it's really foolish if Tom Brady thinks he's going to make up 14 years in these off-season non-contact practices or whatever we're calling them. I think it's dangerous. I did see Pete Blackburn on Twitter reminded us that the FDR quote, the quote that he used from FDR, that FDR also contracted polio. Like, it just is ironic to use FDR as an example of someone's whose quotes you should follow in a moment when disease is running rampant, that somehow FDR is the one we're looking to for some sort of inspiration. But I do think that you're right, Dan, that Brady is probably motivated and singularly focused on winning a championship. I would just say that it's not always important for that to be the singular focus. And I would also say that true leadership in this moment, I would think, is finding a way to get those same benefits that you get from being out on the field in a way that's safe and not dangerous. And he hasn't been able to do that.
All right. And so I wonder what will come of this. I mean, Tom Brady is saying, look, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. We'll see if the NFLPA says anything about that. But, hey, look, he wants to prepare. He wants to get ready. Guys, thanks. Now, Roger Goodell and NFL, they have decisions to make ahead of the start of the season. How concerned should players be about their health and safety? Stephen A., Max, discussing that on First Take immediately after Get Up.
I want everybody to hold on to their seats.
We need some laughter. We need some joy. With a name like Ha Ha Clinton Dix, he was good for a laugh.
The joke wrote itself.
This is nonsensical.
I know very little about, well, about so many things.
We're all right. I'm right. Greeny's right. Husky Clark Kent over there, Jeff Saturday, is right.
Husky Clark Kent.
Jamal Adams is ready to bounce.
Terrific. So there's that.
Just break up, man.
So what you're basically saying, he's just not that into me.
The post-show meeting is going to be long, and it's going to be nasty.
We will have a baseball season this year.
All me.
You look so much like Paul Rudd right now that from the moment I first saw you, it actually threw me off.
Stop it, G.
Can I talk about how mad I am at you and Dan?
Please.
Tom Brady, I get it. He says he doesn't want to wear blazers.
Blazer at the Super Bowl. So maybe he just doesn't have to come.
RC! RC!
What, Dan?
It's Tom Brady!
Hey, Daniel. Daniel, here you go.
Dan, they're picking on you. And candidly, I'm here for it.
It's Tom Brady!
Look at Nick. He loves it. You guys are yelling at each other, and Nick thinks it's the greatest thing of all time.
Okay, our Friday night family movie is Angels in the Outfield from 1994. Remember this one? Divine Help turns the last place Angels into winners in hopes of reuniting a family. And that is this for us right here on Get Up. Keep it right here on ESPN, though, because Stephen A., Max Kellerman, and First Take starts right now.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.